reached the final level. The Spicy McNugget side mission. Maximum flavour, crispy crunch, and a spicy dip with a kick.
Are you ready?
Spicy McNuggets, for a limited time only. Until the 9th of September 25. Fees apply to delivery. Participation and price may vary. Subject to availability. Serving times apply.
Welcome to the Peak to the Pit podcast. I'm Allie Peak alongside TJ Pittinger. This is our fourth episode of this podcast. I have a feeling this one is going to be a doozy because it is the best day of TJ's life. Congratulations. You must be doing cartwheels over at your house.
Best day of my life. I'm not 100% sure there.
I wouldn't do that to Kara and Elena. So let's say it's the third best day of your life.
Yeah, no, but it's pretty good, right? Like it's probably the best day as an FSU fan since.
Sports day? Yeah.
Well, of the last couple of years. I mean, I did go out to Pasadena and see us win. I saw Kobe's last game in person. So it's not, but it's the best day of the last. It's the best day as a Florida State fan since beating Florida in 2017, which that wasn't even a good game, but like anytime you win a rival, you know, rivalry game. So yeah, best day of the last 2 years as a Florida State fan.
Well, and for those of you living under a rock, that is because Willie Taggart is no longer the head coach at Florida State. He was given his walking papers today. I don't know if you know, TJ, I haven't seen anything official come across the wires. If we know exactly what we're doing with the buyout or how that's going to be structured. I did see somebody tweet that between his buyout for USF and Oregon and what he's paying for Florida State, he just got paid about $2.5 million for every game he coached at Florida State.
Man, they really should have calculated that for every game he won. Well, I mean, it's about half.
I don't even. So do like, you want like to
five,
see that?
Yeah, it's like $5 million a win. Yeah, which is pretty terrible. So, but you know, we talked about this, and ironically, like I saw you today, just you know, minutes after it happened. And I said this then, and I still kind of agree with it. You know, the biggest problem was that I don't think things were going to get better. And so You have two options. You can rip off the Band-Aid now and move forward, or you can have a lame duck head coach for another season or for the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season and you know, lose recruits, people are starting to decommit, you know, or were after the loss yesterday, which we'll get into here in a second. You know, but if things don't look like they're going to get better, then what's the point, you know? And so, or what's the point of keeping them? So
I think it must be done eventually. You should do it immediately.
Correct. And it was unsalvageable. And we've talked about this several times. Like, I think a coach should get at least 3 years, you know. But I mean, I think most jobs give you a like an onboarding time. But like at the same time, if you're so incompetent, they're not going to say like, well, we didn't give him his full 90 days of probation. We should at least get him there. If you know week three that somebody's a bad hire in your business or organization or whatever, you just got to move on. And so I think that they had every intention of giving him 3 years. I think they had every intention of giving him 5 or more years. I think Florida State would have loved for this to be a lifetime hire, like Bobby was, like they thought Jimbo would be, or just whatever.
Well,
but I mean,
that's usually the goal, right? Is that the goal is not to situation. The goal is to create a legacy, is to create a dynasty, things that last for a long time. And I think you do that with a guy like Willie Taggart, who is a lifelong Seminole fan. And that's part of why even people other spaces had no room for him, because it is cool to see a guy get a a job he's dreamed about his whole life. Anyway, I saw a really interesting stat for Taggart for his coaching career. As a head coach, prior to getting hired for Florida State, he won 47% of his games. He won 45% of his games as a head coach at Florida State. So honestly, there's part of me that wants to say, is this a situation where Florida State wasn't getting? I mean, if anything, he has shown himself to be somewhat consistent in that department.
Yeah, you know, a lot was made when he was hired about his head coaching record. And if you look at every place that he was, you know, his record was terrible in year one, pretty bad in year two. And then by year three, like, for example, at Western Kentucky, I think they won
he was starting 8 or 9, 10
games. Yeah. Then the same thing happened to USF, that he took over a really was he after Skip Holtz? He took over a bad program. They were really, really bad, barely won any games, got them up to 10 wins. Then goes to Oregon. I think Oregon was like 6-1 when his starting quarterback went down, and they were 4-8 the year before that. And so, you know, if you read, you can make stats say anything. And so, like, if you kind of look at it through that lens, it looked like he turned things around, right, and picked him up. But there's he was going to get fired from USF if not for Quentin Flowers. You know, Quentin Flowers came in and just saved his career and was really a difference, you know, for him there. And he just didn't have that here. Like, he didn't have a Quentin Flowers. I mean, Cam Akers is really, really good. But, I mean, at the running back position, you're not going to have that kind of impact. And so he tried to move him to quarterback in the last 2 weeks. It didn't work either.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. Because
but you are
I think
what your record says. Sorry to interrupt.
You are. Ahead. You are what your record says. And I think, but interestingly, I do feel like those stats and what he did at those programs maybe should have known that at the very least they were going to commit 3 years no matter what happened based on his previous, you know, stops, head coaching stops. I think that that would have happened if not for the way that Florida State was losing, if that makes sense. And I don't know if you, did you see Kurt Herbstreit's rant on Instagram this week or this weekend?
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. So he called Florida State the most undisciplined team in the country, said that all they do is talk trash and want to fight. And so I almost wonder if the record stayed the same, but they weren't so penalized. They didn't have, you know, kind of the trash talking, fighting, maybe he didn't have so many excuses during his press conferences, if he would still be the head coach, even if the record was exactly the same.
Yeah, my gut says no, but I will say Boosters Day at FSU was last year during the Clemson game, and Boosters Day at FSU this year was during the Miami game, where every big booster is at the game. And so you can't get blown out by 40 last year and then lose to a god-awful Miami team. In front of all the boosters and just look incompetent 2 years in a row. And then, you know, so maybe if the games are closer and it's not for the antics and things like that, but, you know, I don't know that it would have been any better. I think
he's not my coach. So I don't have a dog in this fight, but I just, you know, I think the thing as a non-biased observer of this situation. I mean, honestly, I don't really care who Florida State's head coach is. It's not my team. I'd kind of prefer it to be Taggart, actually. But watching his press conferences always was kind of the cringiest part about this entire experiment. There was no accountability. And I think that head coaches are a lot like quarterbacks in that they get too much praise when the team wins, and they probably get too much blame when the team loses. But I think that you're getting paid millions of dollars to stand up at the podium and take the blame and say it's your fault and say you're going to work hard to fix the problems. And instead, I felt like every time I watched him, he was looking for a scapegoat. And even yesterday, I don't know if you saw any of the post-game press conference, but somebody asked him, basically a question about job security. And he essentially said that the administration knows what he inherited. So he would hope that they would give him time to fix the culture problem and everything else that was wrong with the football program. And when I heard that, and you know, obviously, TJ, you know, our listeners know my husband played college football, and he was like, well, lost the locker room right there. You know, and here's the thing. You can tell recruits, hey, I don't have a lot of talent. If you come here, you can play right away. You could, you know, in a closed-door booster meeting, talk about, like, listen, guys, I really do need 3 years because there's not as much talent here as, you know, you thought there was or whatever. But you sure as heck can't stand up at a press conference after a game and talk about your team as being talentless, which is essentially what he did. It doesn't do anything for your locker room. It definitely doesn't help morale. It doesn't do anything to help you towards that next W. And I feel like that's what he was constantly doing the entire time that he was at Florida State.
Yeah. I mean, the blame just went in every direction except for himself. And you know, you kind of understand that, right? Like, as a, you know, as humans, as people, like, pride is something we all struggle with. I don't like to be blamed for anything. I like to point the finger, whether it's a work thing, whether it's a relational thing, whether it's something in my family or friends or whatever. So, like, I don't like to be blamed either. And so I understand that. But sometimes when you're a leader, like, you just have to own things, right? Like, we all screw up.
He could be totally right, too. I mean, those could be the reasons they were losing, and it might not be his fault. But he's the guy. He's the guy making millions of dollars. He's the one that is ultimately responsible at the end of the day.
Yeah. You never saw, you know, toward the very end, you never saw Jimbo do that. You never saw Jameis do that. You think about really good leaders do just own that. You know, it's kind of ironic because he's been pretty bad at times in the NFL, but you know, I remember Jameis' second year, we went like 9-7. We barely missed the playoffs by like percentage points of like strength of schedule or something. And he was great. Like, he had a fantastic second year. His turnovers were really down low. And we would lose games like 45-42. And every time they'd say, are you frustrated with your defense? And he would just say, no, I didn't make enough plays. You know, we scored 7 touchdowns. He'd be like, no, I needed to do more. You know, and that's just kind of what a good leader does. You know, a good leader kind of takes the blame and says, you know, like you said, behind closed doors, like, hey, you guys got to get your crap together.
Sure.
But again, Taggart went from blaming Briles to blaming the administration, blaming other people, blaming
dehydration. Yeah. I mean, it's been all over the place. I mean, I think about a Steve Spurrier, an Urban Meyer, Tim Tebow. And I mean, I think about those things because I'm a Gator, obviously. But rarely is a loss on any of those three people, I guarantee you. But I know I've stood up and watched them stand at the podium and take blame for it countless times. But that's what good leaders do.
Yeah. And I think it's fairly clear just from so many aspects that he just wasn't a good leader, wasn't a good fit. You know, no. I think everybody wanted him to do well. His spring game, I mentioned this, we did kind of a pop-up big three roll-up show today, but you know, his first spring game was the most well-attended spring game in Florida State history. Had 60,000 people at it. Like, Jimbo or Bobby never got that. People were really, really mad at Jimbo, and so that anger that was really placed towards Fisher was all excitement for Willie.
Right.
Even if it wasn't really for Willie,
he wanted to be there.
Yes, like Jimbo had just left, and so they wanted somebody. And even if it wasn't all for Willie, like, they wanted Willie to do well so that we could, like, in your face, Jimbo, like, we got a guy that wants to be here and does well.
Yes, that wants to be here. You want your coach to want to be there. But I think that Fisher leaving, as opposed to Florida State having fired a head coach before hiring Taggart, may have also made Taggart's leash shorter, because I get it. Everybody says Florida State had, you know, some culture problems in the locker room and some issues and stuff. But let's be honest, if Jimbo Fisher doesn't take the Texas A&M job, he wasn't getting fired from Florida State.
No,
he'd probably still be Florida State's coach to this day if he wanted to still be Florida State's coach. And I almost think that that doesn't help Willie either. And we talked last week, and you pointed out on Twitter as well, that, you know, there's a potential that Dan Mullen doing so well in the same window of time with a team that by recruiting rankings is less talented than what Florida State's working with at the moment. But I wonder if Fisher leaving under his own power as opposed to being fired also made it shorter.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that, you know, I mean, this is what we kind of do. But I mean, I think we can look at all the scenarios and just kind of say, hey, you can't go 9-12 in your first 21 games at Florida State. You just can't do that. Like, we are not
unless
are,
the coach before had gone 4-8 the previous three seasons.
We are, I mean, the Florida fans, you know, really, really complained about the athletic department not caring enough about football under their last administration. And other,
which, by the way, I don't think is true at all. Yeah. But Florida fans
love to complain about that.
Sure.
Miami fans, you know, I know they're beating their chest after a win against, you know, the worst coach in Big Three history. But they were wanting to fire their, somebody just tweeted ring, ring, ring. That was a great call for the Noles.
I did see a tweet that y'all have a 4-star commitment on campus when Taggart got fired, and he literally retweeted it and put, that was awkward.
Yeah. there's going to be a couple bumps and bruises, but you know, sure. But anyway, like 3 or 4 days ago, Miami fans were wanting to fire their AD and they hated their coach and everything too. But, I mean, at the end of the day, this is Florida State, and we're not going to put up with incompetence like that. We're not going to keep an Al Golden around for 7 years, or, you know, I mean, Florida did the same thing. You know, McElwain got a little bit more time because they were winning, you know, a terrible East at that point. But like,
yeah, they backed into the East 2 years in a row.
So it was tough to make that decision, but they did the same thing, man. He didn't get 3 years.
Right.
I thought they held on to Muschamp a year too long. You know, it really should have happened after the 4-8 season. But, you know, with the injuries.
See, I honestly think they didn't hang on to him long enough. However, I'm happy the way that things played out because I am pumped that Dan Mullen is Florida's coach. But I actually believe that Muschamp would have gotten Florida on a better path.
As good of a path as they're on right now?
Probably not, which is why I'm happy with Dan Mullen. But right. I actually think that Will Muschamp is actually a really good coach. And I think that a lot of people had no idea the kind of stuff that was going on in the locker room when he took over and the kind of issues that he had to deal with. And I literally only know them because my brother was in that locker room. I don't know. I mean, maybe it just had to be done, but I think if given more time, Muschamp could have done something at Florida.
Yeah, I don't think Muschamp was a bad coach, right? Like, I think McElwain was a bad coach. I think Al Golden was a bad coach. I think Willie Taggart obviously was a bad coach.
I think,
but I think Muschamp's just, he struggled with.
I think hiring Charlie Weiss was actually what and eventually did him in. But I mean, if you're a Florida fan, when you hear Will Muschamp's coming, and oh, by the way, he's bringing Charlie Weiss as his offensive coordinator, I just don't think people realize they were getting like a shell of Charlie Weiss.
Right. You always, I mean, that's how we are as fans, right? Like, you just always hype up everything, you know, that you theoretically can. But yeah, I mean, Florida State did what they had to do. I mean, we'll talk. I want to move pretty quickly to the cocktail game, because I feel like this Miami game at this point is so irrelevant. The biggest takeaway that I have from this Miami game is the ACC network puts 22-minute condensed games on YouTube the morning after the games, and that's a really effective way to watch a game. Like, that's, you know, I was at the cocktail party. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I didn't see much of the game. I followed it on my phone. I knew we weren't playing very well. But like 20 minutes on a Sunday morning, you already know your team lost. Like you don't really care, but I wanted to be somewhat informed because I was going to be on like three podcasts today. And so I kind of wanted to know what had happened. I took some notes. I kind of used the talk to text. So I was looking through them. I thought the, you know, Florida State went for it on fourth down in their own territory, down by four from their own 40. I thought that was on fourth and one. That was really, really just a desperate situation. Miami goes and scores right after that because we don't get it. You know, you've got a one-score game. If you punt that, you probably go into the half down four. Instead, they went into the half down 10. You know, more of the same incompetence several times. I think at least twice. I'll back off the word several. But a couple of times had 10 men on the field. Game 22, and we still can't figure
so
that out.
So many penalties.
You know, incompetence, kick catch interference. I know that happens from time to time, but it just doesn't, you know, it things like that happen way too often. Fighting people on the sidelines. Turnover.
Nine sacks.
Yeah, turnover to start the game. And then the only real drive that we ever put together was the Cam Akers drive, right? Like, so a lot of gadget plays. He threw a pass, misdirections. I think there was a screen that he actually scored on. You know, they cut it to a touchdown, but then, you know, Florida State got the ball back three times in the second half, down by one score. So obviously could have gone and tied it up at any of those points. If you score on a couple of them, you take the lead, but just could not do absolutely anything with it. Another long bomb from Miami. They take the lead by two scores with about 12 minutes to go and you know, effectively end the Tagger era. I actually wrote that. Canes kick a field goal. Blackman throws a pick. Miami runs the clock out and effectively ends the Tagger era. I wrote that at 9:01 this morning. Tagger was fired around 3 or 4. So
3:25 is when that press release came out.
I would just like to point out that 6 hours ahead of time,
you knew
definitely
it was coming.
Knew it was coming. But and whether it happened again today or whatever, so now we try and hire a coach. I mean, you know, we can get into kind of what that future looks like. I know there's some news around certain guys' names and different things like that. I don't know if you want to get into it or not, but
yeah. You know, well,
coaching,
I mean,
search time.
It's coaching search time, and honestly, Florida State has a jump on every other program in the country that's going to be hiring a head coach because the decision's been made. I think there's a decent chance that they know who they want, and that's part of why they made this move. That was the first thing when I my husband came in from outside. He was doing stuff outside. I was like, hey, they fired Taggart, and he was like, well, that means they know who they're getting. And I mean, maybe that's true, maybe it's not, I don't know. But I do think it's easier to make a midseason switch if you have some idea of the direction you're moving in.
Absolutely.
I told you before the podcast started, I had a little interesting encounter today. There is a family that lives in my neighborhood who, I'm not going to say their name, but the husband is a college football coach, and he is not coaching in the state of Florida right now, but his family is still here. And his wife drove by on the golf cart, and she stopped and talked to me, and she was like, yeah, you know, we got the phone call, you know, to find out, gauge our interest on joining Stoops staff if he becomes the next coach at Florida State. And, you know, I talked to her about it for a second. And honestly, my first thought was Mark Stoops because of his ties to Florida State. He has done really, really well with the program at Kentucky. But then when I talked to you, you told me that it might be a different Stoops.
Yeah. So there is nothing like the rumor mill when it comes to a coaching
search. It's
the
best, right?
Right? Like flight tracking.
I was going to say, does Florida State track flights? Because Florida fans were insane
absolutely
about tracking flights.
Yeah, we knew, you know, yeah, a day after Fisher was gone, and there was a flight out to Oregon, you know, and so it was pretty obvious, right? Like what was going to happen. And then, you know, there was a flight out to, like, I don't want to say Phoenix, like Taggart was in Phoenix either recruiting or doing something, you know, I don't know, but, there was another flight just wherever he was next. And so, yeah, we're all over that. But, yeah, so another Stoops. So a name, you know, somebody called me this morning and told me that they had spoken with somebody who's pretty well connected. You know, all of our listeners would kind of know who it was, and that it was probably happening today. And if it didn't happen, it was going to happen Sunday after Boston College, you know, assuming we lose that. So I think that conversations happened and they just kind of said, like, we can't risk beating Boston College. Like, we can't beat them and then fire him. So, you know, what are we going to do? So they just did it today. So as soon as it happens, that same person that told me that called me and said, I'm hearing Bob Stoops. And I, you know, there's nothing to that. There's nothing that says that's done or anything like that. But it was just funny. So I don't think I'd be upset with either one of them. Right. Like I know that we talked and I know you think that the Bob situation is probably less likely. I would agree with that.
It is less likely, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Much, much less likely, but probably cheaper because we'll have to pay a buyout, well, as weird as that
true,
sounds.
Well, that's true, because there's not a buyout. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so either way, I think I'd be comfortable with both for different reasons, and, you know, we'll have plenty of time for this. We don't have to go into, like, you know, what I want out of every single coach. But anyway, what are your thoughts?
Well, I just was going to say, I know for a fact during Florida's coaching searches over the last decade that multiple times Florida gauged Bob Stoops' interest and multiple times he turned Florida down. He was Florida's defensive coordinator. Spurrier had a large hand in, you know, kind of making him into the head coach that he was once he left Florida. So there's a large part of me that says if he was going to turn down Florida, he'd for sure also turn down Florida State, where he doesn't have the same type of ties to the community, to the school, to the whatever. So that would be shocking to me. Mark, on the other hand, wouldn't be shocking to me at all. I think he's probably reached the pinnacle of what he could do at Kentucky. He has put together, he has made Kentucky a viable program. But I think that Kentucky has a ceiling a lot like Mississippi State has with Dan Mullen, and, you know, Ole Miss, some of these bottom half SEC teams that, I mean, you really are only going to be so good no matter what. And I think so if he's looking for a challenge, if he's looking to potentially compete for a national championship, Kentucky's not where it's going to happen. So I could definitely see making the move to Florida State, where you do have more resources. It's more attractive to recruits. He won at Florida State as a defensive coordinator. He knows that program really, really well. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Can they both just come kind of like co?
maybe Bob can be like an advisor.
Yeah.
Take let's Levitt's go. Job.
So now Odell will take over. We talked about this as well. I don't think it's any kind of monumental change, but I do think Florida State is in a better position to beat Boston College today than they were yesterday. That game is for bowl eligibility. I think that I will certainly not cheer it against Florida State in this game coming up, but I almost think it would be better. It won't really hurt either way. I'm not going to say that.
Well, they're not in a worse position than they were. And that's an interesting thing when you lose your head coach, that you don't feel like your team is in a worse position than they were the week before.
For sure.
But you had mentioned
when we lost Jimbo, I was worried. Now, I just didn't know enough about the other two teams we were playing. But we lost Jimbo. I was really worried about, like, are we just going to fall apart? And,
right.
You know, yeah. So, again, I think we're in a better position today than we were yesterday, even for, like, this season. Now, I still think we blow out Alabama State, and I think Florida blows us out. But for the BC game, you know. Maybe.
It'll be interesting to see, because you have mentioned before there's some debate on who has been calling the plays recently because of how different Florida State's offense has looked in recent weeks versus when they started against Boise State at the beginning of the year. So I'll be interested to see what team they resemble on Saturday, because it will be nice to kind of maybe have a little bit of clarity on that. Did Taggart take over and that's why we saw this change, or is this really Briles and he just isn't that good at it? Like, it'll be interesting to see where Florida State's offense goes.
For sure. And so maybe a little bit of a role reversal for us this week, because I feel like I'm on the peak at this point. After today, I spent the weekend in Jacksonville and really had a great time. So let's talk about that game. Let's talk about that experience. And sorry to kind of bring down the mood of the show when I was so excited, but
hey, you know, that's all right. Florida lost to Georgia 24-17. I don't know. I got the Georgia score right when we predicted. I said 27-24. Okay. I did think Florida was going to win. So at least I knew how many points Georgia would score. You know, you had texted me and you feel like the story of the game is Georgia's defense. I personally kind of feel like the story of the game is third downs for Florida, both offense and defense, and the inability to stop Georgia on third down and the inability to get first downs on third down on offense. And, you know, I don't know how much you have seen of Florida Twitter today. I know you've been pretty wrapped up in the fact that you're getting a new head coach, but I mean, there are Gator fans calling for Dan Mullen's head. There are Gator fans saying we're never going to beat Georgia again. That we're always going to be mediocre. And I just think it's kind of insane. Going into the season, every expert, every fan, you know, anybody that has anything to do with college football thought Florida was going to go 1-3 against Auburn, LSU, South Carolina, and Georgia. They went 2-2, and they were very much in the two games that they lost. So it's mind-blowing to me that people now want to throw Dan Mullen, you know, off the ship, essentially, for actually doing better than we predicted that we were going to do during this stretch.
Yeah, no, I think it's just absolutely insane to hang this on Mullen. You know, we talked about this. Georgia was going to play better than they did the last couple of games they were in. Speaking about South Carolina and Kentucky games. And Florida, you know, I really oversimplified it when I said this, but I told a lot of people this. I thought that if Florida played like they did against LSU, that they would win. And if they played like they did against Auburn, they would lose. And they played kind of somewhere in the middle, right? Like they didn't play their very best, but they weren't really, really bad. The defense was good against Auburn, but the offense was really bad against Auburn. And so like all the turnovers and stuff. So I thought that UF played kind of mediocre, and you can't play a rival mediocre. You know, you've got to play them well. Their third down, and I asked Silk about this on the Big Three Roll-Up today, but, you know, their third down conversions were absolutely the difference in the game.
Sure.
And it's half and half. You know, it's like anything else. It's not all one or the other. But some of that's on just good plays by Georgia. They schemed well and found mismatches and found guys that they can kind of pick on in the secondary. And then the other half is that's on Florida, you know, because I know that they were schemed well and just didn't execute. And so, but Florida was still in the game, still had a chance. It really kind of felt like they were out of it, like at halftime. Like I even told you.
It felt insurmountable, even though it was like 6 points.
I said, I don't see a path. The exact words I used were, I don't see a path for Florida to come back and win this. Like, cause just nothing about the game said that Florida could win it, but credit to them. They came back, they made it a game. They got it to one score, couldn't get a stop at the end to end up getting the ball back and seeing what they could do. But, you know, Florida played them well. I mean, you know, they didn't play him well enough, but they were in it, you know, and if they'd have played better, they would have won. But I thought Georgia looked good, you know.
The team we saw the first half of the season, the team that we figured Florida would see. I mean, I think it's very difficult for a good team to play great every single week. That doesn't mean they don't win every single week, but I think that you see different versions of the same team. I think for me, the only part really that was disappointing in this game for me is that there didn't seem to be a lot of juice on the Florida sideline. Like I didn't feel the energy that I feel like I felt coming from the sideline for the LSU game, for the Auburn game. And I mean, you had a bye week. This is a neutral site game. It's a huge rivalry. If you win it, essentially you are going to the SEC championship game unless you really screw up somewhere along the line after this. And so I kind of think the lack of energy is the part that maybe I was the most disappointed with. And I don't know. I mean, maybe Mullen takes some blame for that. I don't really know where that comes. I don't know if Florida themselves kind of got wrapped up into the watching how they played against South Carolina and Kentucky and maybe got a little bit high on themselves. That's not generally indicative of Dan Mullen as a coach. So I hope that that wasn't the case. But I mean, here's the thing. Florida has the opportunity to go 10-2. They probably will. They have the opportunity to make a New Year's Six bowl game. And I mean, we're talking year two, and he did that last year. The year before, we won four games. And we've said on this podcast multiple times, it's easier to go from 4 wins to 10 than it is to go from 10 to 11. And I think that jump from 10 to 11 comes with recruiting and talent. There is a talent gap between Georgia and Florida. There is a talent gap between Florida and LSU and Alabama and Florida. I think Auburn and Florida are relatively on the same playing field in terms of talent. But those three teams that you're chasing in conference have more talent. And I think that Dan Mullen's coaching is what took us from 4 wins to 10, but it's still masking some lack of talent.
Yeah, and I think it'll continue to improve. I mean, Florida's going to win 11 games this year, you know, like, I mean, if they can win a bowl, right? Like,
right.
So they're still very much, you know, we talked about this. We'll get into the AP poll in a little bit, but they're still a top 10 team. I still sure think Florida's a really good team. Like, that's Georgia's best win of the year. It's going to be their best win of the year.
Sure.
You know, I mean, unless Florida drops a couple and Auburn, you know, gets a couple wins, you know, maybe Auburn is a little bit better of a win, you know, if they're,
well, you gotta feel higher, bad for Auburn when they have to play,
yeah, I mean,
Georgia, Alabama, and LSU road all in the same season. I mean,
yeah, and Oregon,
and yeah, Oregon,
yeah,
and then
who is also top 7 game. Yeah, yeah, so yeah, I mean, it's really tough to tell how good Auburn really is just because.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Auburn is a good team. I watching them against Florida, I was not that impressed with them. Watching them in other games, I was. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you have a down game. Sometimes you run into a buzzsaw. I do think an interesting aspect is how these individual teams match up against each other. I actually think Florida matches up better against LSU, even though I think LSU is a better team than Georgia is. And so sometimes yeah, those matchups matter too, especially when you're relying on your coaches to scheme for deficiencies. Playing a team that you already line up better than, or excuse me, match up better with, even though there's a lack of talent, makes it easier on the coaching staff.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, matchups are so big. You know, like Florida matched up better with, I mean, Auburn, it's so weird too, because Auburn matched up better against LSU than they did Florida.
Right.
Florida matched up better against LSU than they did against Georgia.
Even though I think LSU would beat Georgia, and obviously they and Auburn. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's so weird. But it's just about what your strengths and weaknesses are, right? Sure. Like, you know, if your strengths play to somebody else's weaknesses, then, you know, you're not going to like that matchup. But somebody else's weaknesses may be your weaknesses, and they just may be better at your strengths. That's pretty much what LSU did to Florida, right? Like,
sure.
Neither right, team's defense was great.
And neither team has a running game.
Yeah. And Burrow was just able to basically outduel Trask. So,
right. But I mean, barely, because statistically, Trask actually did better. But yes, that is, I mean, they more mirrored each other, which I think is what made it a better matchup. When you look at Georgia, that game was won in the trenches, in my opinion. And Georgia's trenches are a lot deeper than Florida's.
Yeah. So the outlook for Florida is, you know, they're honestly still right on track. You know, like there's nothing, you know. Now, I will say I don't really see an opportunity for them to drop a game just because Missouri's been really bad. I don't think Vandy is great. And then, you know, I don't think anything changes at FSU. So Florida's really got to have a letdown to lose one of these last three games. But if they do, that's kind of a problem. But
they have lost to Missouri the last two or three years. They've lost to Missouri. And so, I mean, Missouri's not good, but Missouri's had Florida's number. Interestingly, it's probably going to be about 37 degrees at kickoff for the Florida-Missouri game, which, I mean, I don't know, something to keep an eye on. I don't think that Missouri beats Florida, but I don't think it's as gimme a game as it maybe should be.
Yeah. So, but I think Florida ends up winning out, and then we'll see what happens in a bowl game. Again, I don't think the bowl game really matters whether they win or lose it. But I saw an interesting projection today. They could see like a Virginia in the Orange Bowl. They would just absolutely beat Virginia's brains in my opinion. You know, I've seen other projections and stuff like that, which are always kind of fun, but really, really irrelevant. But I'll say this too. The tailgate was absolutely awesome. Had a great time. Very different tailgate than what we did in Orlando, but we had, I don't know, between 75 and 100 people out. We were at the fairgrounds. We had a really big area in front of one of
such a fun game. Oh,
the atmosphere was so much fun. It was really neat. I like 3:30 kickoffs. I like noon kickoffs even more, just because I'm old now. But
I can't do the noon, but I like 3:30. I think it's the perfect.
I like 3:30 a lot, like, because it's a day game, but then it, you know, sun's going down while you're finishing up. And so, no, I thought it was great. I had a fantastic time. We talked about this a little bit, but I'd like to go back up next year. But you know, the game being on Halloween makes that a little more difficult. We'll kind of see how that all plays out. But,
that makes it hard on us parents with children that want to trick or treat and stuff.
They can trick or treat at the tailgate. Let's go. trigger treat for that white claw, baby.
2-year-old, it's a lot harder to say that to your children my children will be 6. Oh, my older two will be 6 at that time, and it's a lot harder to explain to your 6-year-old. We could fake it for Elena, but I don't know that we could do that for Hadley and Hayden.
But I'd like to definitely go back. We'll kind of see how that all kind of plays out, you know, next year. But I had a great time. And so if you've never been, I don't care if you're a Florida or Georgia fan, just go, because that's a fun one to go to. Speaking of bowl projections, I saw this. This is what we were texting about, and I had forgotten until just now. So earlier this week, we were texting about it, and I scroll back and look. Looks like it was Monday. So it's been about a week since this came out. This has probably changed because of FSU's loss. But Brett McMurphy was projecting Florida State to play UCF in the Military Bowl. I don't know what the qualifications are for the Military Bowl as far as like where that ranks, but it is an ACC versus AAC game. I want to say it's the lowest tiered ACC game. I just can't think of another one below it. Like the Pinstripe Bowl is above it. I want to say the Birmingham Bowl is also above it. So I think the Military Bowl, it's either the last or the second last ACC ranking bowl. Now, other bowls can take somebody from a conference, but the Military Bowl would get like the first pick before, like, you know, some random bowl, just whatever that has no conference affiliation would get a pick. So, you know, your higher tiered, you know, ACC ones are, you know, obviously the Orange Bowl. And then you know, there's a couple levels, but then you look at like the Champs Sports Bowl, which I believe used to be the Citrus Bowl. Then you get into like the Belk Bowl and stuff like that. So
there's actually two bowl games played in Orlando now. So you have the Champs Sports Bowl and you have the Citrus Bowl.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
Which I think actually
the Citrus Bowl's SEC.
It was the Capital One Bowl, but it may have actually gone back to the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that sponsorship's still there or not.
Which, unless that's changed, is an SEC versus Big Ten thing.
Big Ten.
I saw South Carolina play Nebraska there, and I also saw South Carolina play Wisconsin there.
I saw Florida lose to Michigan there.
Oh, yikes.
Been to the Outback Bowl more times than I can count.
Oh, I'm so over the Outback Bowl. You know what I liked about the Outback Bowl is it was 11 a.m. And then they moved it back up. Like with everything else.
The Capital One Bowl was 11 a.m. when I went on it too.
Yeah, like why they moved those up to noon, it's so stupid. But anyway, so Florida State.
Second place Outback Bowl ring.
Oh, that's worse than state championship rings.
Right.
That is.
I mean,
you don't wear that
one. Bowl game gives the losers
a ring. Oh, I mean, a bowl game is just such a low standard, saying that as a Florida State fan that's about to miss his second one. But. Ugh, losing a bowl game is a bad reason to give somebody a ring. So, but Florida State UCF again. I think that's probably changed. You know, I don't think Brett will predict that tomorrow.
I'll text you what
it is. But it would be so great, wouldn't it? Like, I hate the military bowls in DC. I'd love to go to DC, but I'm not going to DC in December. I'm already going to New York next week, and that's going to be, you know, cold enough. But, you know,
that would be awesome. Could you imagine with Florida State, with all of the problems that they've had this year, if they play UCF in a bowl game and beat them? Does that mean that like UCF Twitter could be canceled?
100% canceled. I want to see if your answer is the same. Who would you cheer for in that game?
Oh, I would cheer for Florida State all day long.
Let's go. I'll bring over the girls.
I literally might wear garnet and gold.
Let's go. Yeah, now in UCF, I mean, they were struggling with Houston in the first half. I forgot to talk to you about that today when I saw you, but I was thinking about you while we were watching that game at the tailgate. I don't know. I think UCF would probably beat us, but it's like I'd love the opportunity.
Interesting in the UCF game, which I did watch, was that by halftime, the stadium was half empty, and they were a couple points. I think they were down 2 points at halftime. To Houston. And so I'm interested to see where their fan base goes from here, because here's the thing. You cannot go undefeated every season. It doesn't happen. The fact that it happened 2 seasons in a row, or I guess almost 2 seasons in a row, is an anomaly in itself. So if you want to prove that you belong, part of that is your fans supporting your team when you've got 2 losses.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. Like going 10-2 for your regular season, which they have every opportunity to do, is great. So it's crazy to me to think that there are so many fair weather fans that would have a stadium that is, by the way, half as big as all of the rest of ours, half empty by halftime when you're down 2 points to an in-conference team is kind of crazy to me. And you'll see Twitter, like I saw last week, multiple people talking about Heupel and was he the right guy for the job and all of this stuff. Like the level of delusion is like, I don't know, maybe worse than at any of the rest of our programs, which is really saying something. And that comes from fans becoming fans literally 2 or 3 years ago. And not understanding the ebbs and flows.
Not understanding how college football works, right?
Right.
Like not understanding why Bowden's run was so impressive, or why what Dan Mullen is doing right now is so impressive. Not to put those on the same level, but or the dominance of the Canes in the 80s and things like that. Like they just have no idea.
None. You know? And I think I almost feel bad for Dylan Gabriel, or because when you decide to go with a true freshman, you are deciding to understand that there are going to be bumps in the road with that true freshman as a quarterback. And I think that that's part of the problem too. I've seen so many people say like, are we starting the right guy? Or are we this? Are we that? Like that is so damaging to the psyche of really any quarterback, but for sure a freshman. But if this is the guy you're deciding to go with, you are deciding to grow with him as well. And that means growing pains, But that also means that you may have two or three seasons where he's a complete badass because you gave him time to develop. But I don't know that that's anything that they fully understand.
No, not at all. Sometimes you you know, it's so funny to say it now with everything that's going on in Florida State. But honestly, you sometimes really do have to take a step back, take a step forward, and that's really okay. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to take
and 10-2 seven not steps that big back. Of a step back. I
it's
mean,
really
that's,
not.
It's not. And you're not going to go undefeated every year, even if you play in a crap conference. Which, by the way, the AAC is decent this year. I think they have four teams in the top 25 right now, which that's got to be more than the Pac-12, right? I mean, that's good. That's great. That's impressive. None of those teams are UCF, by the way, which means that at the very least, they are the fifth best team in their conference currently.
Yeah, and I think they finished with another loss. No, I'm sorry, they don't. They have Tulsa, Tulane, and USF. So I think they do win those three. They don't. I thought they played. They kind of avoided playing some of those ranked teams. They did play Cincinnati, who was ranked, but they kind of got out of the other side of it. So that would definitely be an interesting bowl game. Although I think we would lose. So and I won't even be that upset if we miss the bowl this year. Like last year, I was pretty bummed about missing a bowl. This
would
year, I
would rather miss a bowl or lose to UCF in a bowl.
Probably miss the bowl. Because the UCF fans aren't, I mean, that's not even that good of a troll. Like, oh, you missed a bowl. Okay, well, you missed a bowl when you won two years ago.
Yeah, when you won no games.
But like losing head to head, yeah, I'd rather just miss it. So yeah,
I'll play UCF in a bowl this year. Florida won't fall to a bowl that bad, but I'll play him in a bowl this year.
Okay, ultimate scenario, you guys lose to us, fall to a much worse bowl, and beat them. Then I think everyone wins.
I don't know that I'm willing to trade a UCF or FSU loss just so that I can beat UCF. I think you can look at game film and know who would beat who without that game actually even happening.
I think it'd be a coin flip, honestly,
at
Vegas.
Door.
An ultimate scenario really would be for Florida State to reel off the next three wins so that we could really just kind of say like, look, that was it. You know, like it was that simple. Like, I don't think there's any chance to beat Florida. I mean, Florida's really just got to play a terrible game for that to happen. But, I will say, I don't think it's much better, but I think we're in a better position to beat Florida today than we were yesterday. Again, I think like,
well, again,
better
you're not in the worst
very,
position, so.
Yeah, better is very marginal. Like, don't think I'm saying that we have a chance to win, because I don't think so. But
you're saying there's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance, which before there was none. And now there's probably very little as well. But somebody just asked, is this the bust that the FSU administration had warned us about? all right, a little bit of a national outlook. I know that we've spent a lot of time on those two teams. UGA is technically back in it, I guess, you know.
Whoever won that game was back in it.
They have a pretty tough road, you know. How happy would you be backdooring into Atlanta because they drop a game or two?
I'll take it. I'll take it. Florida backdoored into Atlanta the last two times that they've been there, and they were the sacrificial lamb for Alabama both times. I think this team is potentially capable of holding their own slightly more. That doesn't mean that they would win, but look, I'll take a backdoor into Atlanta any day of the week.
Wouldn't
I don't
complain
think it
about
happens.
It. Yeah, UGA has Missouri this week, then A&M. I'm sorry, then Auburn, then A&M. You know, I think they're better than all three of those teams. I think they beat all three of those teams, but I think Auburn and A&M are better than South Carolina was. So,
sure,
you know, the chances exist.
Could very well beat them, but they have to drop two games. Yeah. And Florida has to win out. I don't think they drop two of the three. I think there's, I don't know, a 30 to 40% chance that they lose the game to Auburn, but I can't.
can't see them
dropping two.
Correct.
Which then at that point, technically they are tied and Georgia gets the nod because of the head-to-head.
But if they lose two, then they have three losses, right?
Correct. So, and then Florida goes straight up because Florida would have – that's assuming Florida has two losses because they win out.
Right.
But if it's tied up, Georgia gets the nod with the head-to-head.
So does Georgia have a chance in Atlanta? They went out, like, you know, have they figured things out?
It probably at least partially depends on who they play versus Alabama and LSU, which I kind of think until they prove me wrong, we have to assume it's Alabama. I actually think that they may have a better shot against Alabama than LSU. And it's kind of that thing that we talk about where it's you want the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. I think they know a lot more about Alabama because of the last two seasons. They have a lot more experience with that. So I don't think they win either one of those, but I think they have a better shot against Alabama than they do against LSU.
So,
which is the exact opposite of what I would say if Florida was going to that game.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't think they would win either. But you know, who knows? You get to Atlanta and kind of see what happens.
Well, and we also have to keep watching Tua too, which is something you know, of interest. Supposedly, we're gonna see him this week. We don't know what percentage healthy he's going to be. Obviously, Saturday will tell us, you know, kind of a lot. But if this is any sort of nagging injury, then obviously that's a factor that we would consider at that point in time.
Yeah. We'll get to the Alabama LSU game. I do want to talk about a couple of things there. National Outlook, we keep asking, what about Oregon? So they're ranked seventh now. You know,
56-24 over USC, who USC has kind of started to come into their own a little bit half of the season.
On the road. You know, Oregon's ranked seventh, Utah's eighth, right? So if they both win out, they play each other in the Pac-12 championship. Or do they? How's the Pac-12 do that? Do they just take the top two teams? Or I don't know what sides Oregon and Utah are on. Pac-12 standings. If only I had this device. That I could look anything up. Yeah, it's north and south, and they're both in all opposite sides. So, you know, say they both went out, they're both sitting at 11-1. Somebody moves to 12-1 with a win over a top. Oh, by that point, it's going to be a top Penn State or Ohio, top 5 or 6 team in the country, right? If nothing else crazy happens. Is that enough? Is a win against the number, let's say 7 team, enough to knock out whoever loses Alabama LSU? Because we've been saying it's not.
But I don't also think it is. I think I've been saying this all along. I think there's two SEC teams that go again. And I think history would show that, you know, that's pretty likely. I don't know. When you look at – so their loss is going to be to Auburn, who we can assume – let's say they're going to have 4 losses, right? LSU, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So their best win will be Utah. Their loss will be the 5th best team in the SEC. I don't know. That's hard to overcome. Now, they have been looking a lot better as of lately, and I understand the loss is the first game of the season, which if you want to lose, you lose early, you know, in terms of making it to these things. But I don't know. I guess it would also depend on how that LSU-Alabama game goes, because if the loser loses by 20 points, then I don't really know that they have an argument. If the loser loses on a last-second field goal, people are going to want to see, you know, give that second team a shot.
Yeah. Okay, so talking about that game, I paused heavy there. Well, before we talk about that game, the only other thing I'll say is there's not a ton – there just doesn't seem to be a ton of opportunity for chaos remaining. Clemson, it would just be an absolute shock if they lost a game. Ohio State.
No, but they do play South Carolina, who is not good, but is their rival. So it's the same concept as Florida, Florida State. Crazier things have happened. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there is at least the potential for chaos there because of that.
Yeah. I mean, it exists. Like I said, I agree with you. I don't think there's any realistic chance. Like, I think Clemson is a, you know, 90% to win that game. You know, it's kind of a one out of every 10 times.
Right.
Penn State looks good, but I think Ohio State does end up winning. Kind of the same thing there. I mean, could they lose to Michigan to end the year? Yes.
Michigan's looked stronger as of lately. I thought Michigan was way overhyped at the beginning of the year, but I definitely feel like they're coming into their own again a little bit. If there was ever a time for Michigan to beat Ohio State, you would think it would be this year, because as Day continues to get more and more comfortable as head coach of Ohio State, you just got to think that window closes more and more.
Yeah. The other thing too is that Penn State, Ohio State play each other the week before Ohio State goes to Michigan. You know, fortunately, Ohio State does get that game in the shoe. But, you know, that's going to be a really big one. I mean, Penn State or Ohio State, one of them is going to cancel each other out for sure.
Well, and so then we're assuming at this point that Ohio State ends up with either Wisconsin or Minnesota in the Big Ten championship game. Which, I mean, Minnesota's undefeated currently, but are we actually thinking that they're going to stay undefeated?
I mean, it'll be really tough. They've got to play Penn State, Iowa, Northwestern, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I think a best case scenario for them there is 2-2. If one of those losses is to Wisconsin, then Wisconsin goes.
Right.
Or if one of the losses is to Iowa, Iowa would go. So there's a lot can be decided there. Obviously, Minnesota controls their own destiny.
Future
FSU coach PJ Fleck is doing okay. Now, but I think Ohio State beats whoever's on the other side, or Penn State does. Like, I think if Penn State beats Ohio State, I think they run the table and they win it all. Or not win it all, but I think they win the...
Did you see how cold game day was to Minnesota? So Minnesota's, like, been pulling out all the stops to try and sway game day to come on Saturday. And it was at, like, noon this Saturday that game day announced that they're going to LSU, Alabama, which obviously they are. It's 1-2. But I just thought it was funny because they didn't even, like, drag it out for suspense or anything. It literally was just like on the ticker at like 12:05. Oh, by the way, guys, this is where we'll be. I kind of felt bad for Minnesota, but I mean, they had their governor making pleas for game day to come.
Yeah. I mean, it would be such a cool experience. Like, I actually would really, really like it for them, but I mean, we've talked about it. Like, you just can't go away from 1-2.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you should just petition, you know, the teams you play the week before and after to just let you flip, you know? So, So Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, LSU, the way that we expect the playoff rankings to come out tomorrow night, or actually, I guess it'd be Tuesday night. That's how we think it finishes. Maybe not in that order, but like that's how you've got it finishing.
Do you know that the team that was number one in the first playoff poll every year has never won the championship?
I do. I did know that. Yeah.
I think that's interesting. So you actually don't want to be the team that is number one when this poll comes out on Tuesday at 7 o'clock or whatever time it comes out. But yeah, I think it's, LSU, Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. That would be my guess. I mean, I guess in theory there's a possibility that one of those SEC teams is Georgia instead. I don't actually see that happening. But then on the outside looking in, I guess the first one would probably be Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. Or Utah, you know, if Utah,
or Utah
runs
yeah.
the table and gets in. And then probably the number six – would be Penn State. If Penn State loses to Ohio State, doesn't make it, But,
right.
you know, whatever love we're showing Alabama and LSU right now probably should be pretty close to consider for Penn State as well.
Sure.
If Penn State loses a 3-point game in the Shoe and then wins out, they should probably be getting whatever kind of love we would give Alabama for losing a 3-point game at home or whatever. So,
I mean, especially everybody keeps talking about how Ohio State's the most complete team in the country. So if that is truly the case, that they're the most complete team in the country, then if your only loss is to that team, then you definitely, you know, should be getting some love. Part of that has to do with the way that the conference is set up as well. But I guess it's the same thing as LSU and Alabama. But I don't know. I don't think the Big Ten gets the same kind of respect outside of Ohio State, because I do think in general Ohio State does, although they've been on the outside looking in with one loss, you know, in the past. But yeah, you're right. Penn State should get
they should get, you know, close to that consideration. In my opinion, if they can win.
If LSU and Penn State played on a neutral field, or Alabama and Penn State played on a neutral field, do you think Penn State could beat either one of them?
I mean, I wouldn't take them head to head, but the one thing I'll say is I have watched very little Penn State football this year to be able to make an educated.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying no, but that's like on name recognition, right? Like it's just because I am not going to.
So would you like to go on record and tell the Florida State fans that are tweeting to hire Franklin that that's probably not going to actually happen?
Yeah, guys, that's probably not going to happen.
You know, I guess it's not as wild as thinking that you're going to hire Urban Meyer, but I don't know that it's that far behind it.
Yeah, so I'd be fine with that though.
Like, no kidding. Of course you'd be fine with it, but like, really?
Who was the first team you had brought this up, but who was the first team ever ranked first in the first college football playoff rankings?
I am not sure. Do you know?
I do. You want to take a guess?
It's
2014.
So is it Alabama?
Nope.
All right, who is it?
There was another team that was kind of dominant in 2014.
Florida State?
It wasn't. They were second. It was Dan Mullen's Mississippi State.
Okay. They were number one for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, which was such horse crap because, you know, we were winning close games. But, I mean, come on. Look how those, you know, I know we didn't end up winning it that year. But
That's a good stat.
Very interesting. Do you know who the all-time reigning BCS champions are?
Who?
That's us. So just because there is no more BCS.
Perfect.
So this Alabama LSU game, here's a really good, takeaway. Well, no, I think this is still being competitive. I heard a scenario this week. I heard people suggest that Alabama should sit Tua if he's not 100%. And even if he is 100%, you sit him, say he's out with an injury, lose close to LSU, and you still get in the playoff because the committee has said we will take injuries into account when, you know, if you lose a game close without your best player, we will take that into account. And so
Alabama's, not a single chance in hell Nick Saban would do that.
Absolutely not. But think about that strategy, though, like how it's it would be. I think Alabama should do it, especially if he's any less than like 75-80%. I think you absolutely do it. Like,
well, if he's any less than 75-80%, I don't think you should play him, because I don't.
In the BCS era, though, you do.
Yeah.
Because
I don't know. I don't like it for him personally. And I also just don't think Alabama in general is used to just having a game manager. So I think that team is talented enough that you can just have a game manager. You don't actually have to have a great quarterback to win. I mean, we've talked about this before, but like this is a new experience for Alabama the last 3 years of having an actual like Heisman worthy quarterback. That's not what they have done in the past. So I don't know. Does it make him more of a liability than a help if he's only at 75%? I don't think you do it for the reason that you're saying. I hate that. I hate that about.
I know you do. I know that's just so anti your competitive nature. But, you know, if you lose with Tua, I don't want to say you're done, but, you know, you're probably, I mean, you're grasping at straws. Like, you're needing some stuff to happen. But if you lose without Tua and it's close, you're 100% in. Like,
well,
you're not grasping
anything. If the committee is really willing to take injuries into account. I mean, I know they said they had.
Which those goalposts, those committee goalposts seem to change every year.
Oh, but for sure.
But they've said they would. You know, like they've said that's a thing that would happen. I don't know. I don't really like the idea of it either. But I mean, man, like what a, I mean, nobody would know. Nobody's going to, you know, when Tua and Nick are in his office by himself and Tua says, oh, I'm 90%. And Nick just says, yeah, just, I want you to 100% or you can't play, you know. And, you know, that's just kind of an internal Nick Saban decision, you know. And like I said, I don't think he would do that either.
Maybe I was going to say, maybe a different coach. That's just not a Saban move.
Yeah, and I mean,
and
also
I think
Alabama,
part of that is
right?
Like, Saban isn't afraid of anyone.
Right.
And that is kind of a...
We're looking at it from almost like a Florida State thought process. Like if this was Jameis, right, in 2014, like, hey, just take the loss, move on, go to the playoff. Yeah, when you're Alabama, you don't have to have these conversations because you just beat everybody. So, Florida against Vandy this week, any real chance of a letdown, you know, coming off the loss?
I mean, I think Dan Mullen said in his press conference, we're going to see what this team is made of after this loss. There's probably some truth to that. I can't imagine that they come out, and don't win. However, I do think they kind of play sluggish in noon games. It's a noon game. But I don't. I think it's just an uneventful win.
Florida State and BC. Any thoughts there?
I mean, I think kind of at this point, Florida State's playing with house money. If they can put together enough wins to be bowl eligible, great. If they can't, they get a pass for having not. So I don't think they have anything to lose. Therefore, I think there's probably a decent chance they win.
Yeah, I think it's like a – I want to say it's like a pick 'em in mm-hmm. Vegas. So I was really expecting us to jump up to be pretty big favorites after the news came out, but that line hasn't moved like that just yet. Penn State, Minnesota. I mean, I assume you'd like to see Minnesota win there, right, just for the upset purpose?
I mean, I really like James Franklin, so I – find myself pulling for Penn State when it doesn't affect me in any way. But I don't know. I don't really care. I think it's an interesting matchup. I have to think Penn State's more talented. So it would probably be great for college football for Penn State to win. Just if we're talking about getting the best teams to the biggest bowls, to the biggest, you know, the highest ranked spots. I'll be watching though.
If Minnesota was to win out and win they go 13-0, they take that last spot. Like they take the Big Ten spot, right?
Well,
even though
they
ranked like 13th now.
They would have had to beat Ohio State. Absolutely, they take it for sure.
Right. They would have had to be in these last few weeks, they would have had
Penn
to be
State,
Penn State,
Iowa,
Wisconsin, and Ohio State.
Yeah. Oh, 1,000% they go.
Okay. They're 13th now. Which would be the lowest, you know, that's low for a team to jump up and make it. But those are some huge wins.
I mean, I think they probably drop three games by the time all is said and done. But their schedule is really backloaded. So that 13 will skyrocket if they win those games that are at the end.
Louisville at Miami. I don't know why this is relevant or not. I just, you know, I'm just more than anything appreciative of Miami beating us yesterday.
Cheering for them the rest of the season?
Absolutely not. I hope they lose every game going forward. I mean, I'm just glad that, you know, before Saturday, I thought that I didn't have the worst coach in the state. I found out on Saturday that I did have the worst coach in the state. And I'm glad that I only had to live with that for a few hours. Like, I no longer have, like, Odell Higgins is a better coach than Manny Diaz. So I'm glad that I no longer have the worst coach in the state. I just hope that Louisville can win there. Miami's only a 7-point favorite. Louisville's really turned things around. Like Satterfield's doing a good job there. They look more confident. They've been, you know, kind of gaining, you know, just kind of, I hate the word momentum, and we can get into that later, probably offline, but you know, they've really just been kind of like improving and playing a lot better. So I think that game's going to be actually pretty good. They beat Virginia, they beat Wake Forest, you know, lost to Florida State early in the year. I think they would beat us now. So I think that Miami Louisville game will be pretty good. So really just kind of a good chance to watch Miami lose.
I think Miami is an enigma. I mean, I know when Florida played them, it was the first game of the season, and everybody improves from the first game of the season, but I really didn't think they were that bad watching them play. I was actually somewhat impressed with their defense in general. And then there's been times that I've been like, oh my God, what am I even watching? So I don't know. I feel like they're such a hard team to predict. I don't put money on them because I feel like you never know what you're going to get.
And then I'm looking at this now. So that's all I've got for the games for this weekend, unless there's anything else you're kind of looking at. I think UGA beats Missouri. But
yeah,
if they lose to Missouri, then I think Florida fans will root really hard for, you know, either Auburn or A&M. But I don't think they lose that. I'm looking at a bowl projection right now, and it's got Florida against Wake Forest in the Orange Bowl as opposed to Virginia, which I do think that would be a little bit of a better
matchup.
Like, I still think Florida wins that, but I think Wake's better than Virginia. Wake's got more of an offense. You know,
Wake is better than Virginia, but I mean, I would be, both of those matchups would be very ho-hum for me. I think Florida wins both of them unless, you know, barring some crazy something or other. I just don't, neither one of those games excite me in any way.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of the bowl season is, right? Like, if you don't, you know, because of the fact that Florida is not going to finish second, right? Like, they can't. They're going to finish 10-2.
I don't know that Florida is far enough removed from not being bowl eligible to being lackadaisical about making a New Year's Six bowl game. I think that does happen when, you know, you're consistently there and then you just, you know, lose the SEC championship game. So then that sends you to the Sugar Bowl instead. And you get a Louisville team who you feel like you're so much better than. Like, that's when stuff like that happens. I personally was pumped to play Michigan last year just because I wanted the chance at redemption. And obviously Florida got that opportunity. So I think depending on who the opponent is, I don't think that that's going to be, it would be a letdown to be in a New Year's Six Bowl for Florida, even though obviously if they won this Georgia game, they would be playing in the SEC championship game. But I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season plays out. I would love to play, you know, I don't know, Texas, USC, Notre Dame, Oregon, Washington, somebody, Oklahoma. You know, Oklahoma, somebody that Florida doesn't get to see on a regular basis. And not that we see Virginia or Wake Forest, but I don't know. Those matchups don't do anything for me. I would like to see a perennial powerhouse that we don't ever have the opportunity to play against.
Yeah, for sure. And that's kind of what stinks about the bowl affiliations.
Yeah, you know,
I've never been a big fan of that. First of all, because I never thought I'd get to see Florida State in the Rose Bowl. So obviously that did happen.
Right.
But, you know, why not switch it up? Like, why not change it up? I don't think there's any, like, money lost because they're all in it together. Like,
sure.
Whatever money you make from one. So, you know, and that's the thing. Florida very likely will – I mean, when's the next time Florida is going to play in the Sugar Bowl? You know, just with the play, with the way the playoff works,
they would have to lose. Generally, the loser of the SEC championship is who plays in the Sugar Bowl.
And Florida lost it twice and didn't go. You know, so because they take the second best team. So what they'll do this year is, you know, you know, Georgia's going to lose the SEC championship, but if the loser of Alabama LSU doesn't get in the playoff, that team goes to the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, so.
And then at that point, Georgia probably goes to the Orange Bowl, and Florida's looking at the Outback at that point.
Yeah. So, you know, anyway, so I hate the tie-ins. I think that we're, I hate that we're going to waste an Orange Bowl on a Wake Forest or a Virginia or just whatever. Like, that, you know, you should just – there are – what are there? Six total New Year's Day games. Give me your top 12 teams and throw them in those games and make the matchups exciting.
Sure.
I don't care about, oh, we got to put this team against this team and blah, blah, blah. Go grab a group of five team because they get on in automatically. All that's stupid. Just give me your 12 best teams and put them in the bowls.
Agreed.
Oh, man. Anything else you can think of before we go? My Lakers are 5-1.
No, I mean, you're well, yay for you that your Lakers are 5-1. Of course, Bucks found a way to lose again today.
Jameis has to do a better job of like coaching the defense. Like, he can't let the defense give up 42 points in the game. So that's on him. It's got to be better next week.
I just hate the NFL overtime rules. They just, it drives me nuts that the winner is essentially determined by the coin toss.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's crap.
Both teams scored every drive, like in the fourth quarter, right? Like, it was just you score, we score, you score, we score. Yeah. Actually, Seattle turned the ball over, and then the Bucks turned it over right after that. But then outside of that, everything was just score, score, score. So why wouldn't you want to go to like a college setup and just see the teams go?
If for nothing else, it's fair. I mean, I don't want anything about my sport to be determined by something that doesn't have to do with my sport, if that makes sense. Like, sure. I don't. It's stupid that a coin toss can determine the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the Bucks game, like, if they would have gotten the ball first, they would have gone down and scored two. Like, there's no – I mean, so because both defenses suck, you just, you know, give the coin toss to whoever – you know, you give the win to kind of whoever wins that. I mean, it's frustrating, but it is what it is, and it doesn't really matter because today's a glorious day, and we're not going to let that get us down. So
there you go, and we've got – playoff polls that are coming out this week. I can't believe it's week 11. When Game Day said something about week 10 of the college football season, I literally looked at my husband and was like, are you kidding me? I cannot believe, like, I feel like it just started.
Well,
and we're coming up on week 11.
We're almost to my new favorite time of the year, of the football year. My favorite time of the football year for the last few years has been the off season. But it's about to be the coaching search season. And so
you're in the coaching search season, babe. It is going on right this minute.
You're right. So that's where we are. So I'm jacked about it. You know, because here's the thing. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter who we hire. We're going to lie about it. We're going to say it's a great hire. Whether it's good
or
bad.
Your fans are going to be pumped. They're going to tell us that our rivals should be scared.
Oh, absolutely. You guys should be shaking in your boot. Like, recruiting's never been so bright. Like, you know, we'll get that bump. You know, we'll get a bump from a new coach.
Which I saw Silk tweet something about that earlier today, I think. I think it was Silk. And he had a valid point, which is everybody talks about all the recruits that scatter when a head coach is fired, but nobody ever talks about the fact that as soon as a new hire is made, there's a whole bunch of guys that jump on the ship because they're pumped about it. And it does absolutely. Both of those things happen when you hire a new coach.
I think it was Newberg, but I'm okay with giving Silk the credit too.
Yeah, maybe it was Newberg. I don't know. It was something that somebody said that showed up on my timeline.
Yeah, but I think that – I mean, I think that's absolutely the case. Just like when – you know, I think it's a little bit of a different situation, but, you know, when Jimbo left, Taggart improved that class. You know, Taggart leaves.
You know, and stability
Urban will improve this class, you know, it'll be – just get better.
I love those are my favorite tweets. And actually, not even just the we're going to hire Urban Meyer, the ones that are like, I'll be done with this program if we bring Urban Meyer in.
Right.
Bull. Like, there's not a Florida State fan out there that wouldn't say yes to Urban Meyer if Urban Meyer, if you ask and Urban Meyer says yes.
Yeah. And
I mean, which is not going to happen, but.
And here's the thing. You know, my favorite is, so I put out a top five, just like a coaching board right now. And like I was driving back from Jacksonville. My guys texted me like, hey, I'm making an edit for you. Like, what do you want me to say? And I'm like, bro, I don't even know. So I just listed five people. And so many people are mad at me right now for putting like Les Miles and Urban Meyer. And I'm just like, this is not, I'm not telling you these are the five. Like, these
hey, are Les not, Miles would not be a bad hire, by the way.
I'm like, these are not the top five candidates that are most likely to get the job. These are just who I would go after. You know, right. Like I understand. Somebody said,
so what do you think make the, Urban Meyer say no to you?
Absolutely. You make everybody say no. You, I mean, you learn this in dating, you know, you set your sights high and, you know, end up with me. So that's kind of what Kara did. But,
oh my God,
you know, so yes, you absolutely make him say no. Why not? You know, what is there to lose? Like, yeah. Somebody asked me, what do I think the chances of, Tate Casey actually just liked this tweet. What do you think that somebody said, what do you think the chances are that they hire Urban Meyer? And I said, less than 1%.
1,000%. That is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So less than 1%, you know, it's probably like a 10th of a percent, right? Like, you know,
that's
I
being
think
generous,
everyone has their price. So like,
yeah, but
that tenth
you also
of a,
have to have money to hit that price.
Well, that's what I'm
price.
Saying. Yeah, that tenth of a price or that tenth of a percent is that we somehow make him an offer for like $10 million.
A bajillion dollars.
Yeah, like, you know, that's kind of the off percent. Like we could literally buy him out, right? And I don't think we have that money. But I mean, I also didn't think we had the buyout money either. So,
which we don't know if you do or not. We don't know what happened there yet.
So, you know, anyway. So, but yeah, people that get mad about it are my favorite because I'm just like, look, I'm not sitting here predicting Urban Meyer. I'm just telling you that I would try. You know,
yes.
Like
you got to look at the best coaches
ask the pretty
that are
girl
available
out to
and
prom, and you know, she might say no, but at least you asked. You know, yeah. There was a chance she was going to say yes.
You never know if you don't ask. But I do think I would look at Les Miles. I would look at Mark Stoops. I would look at PJ Fleck. I think Florida State has to be realistic about where they are, and I don't think that any fan base is good at doing that. So that's not just a Florida State knock. But you don't have as much money as some of the other programs in the country. You don't have as long a leash as some of the other programs in the country. You do have the most fertile recruiting grounds in the country. So – you know, you do have that going for you. You don't have the top facilities in the country. So, I don't know. I think a Les Miles, I think Florida State's way more attractive than Kansas. I think Florida State's way more attractive than Kentucky. I think it way more attractive than Minnesota. So look at those places and those are who you go after.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think you try all those, you know, and we talked about this. I think they already kind of know what they're doing. So we'll kind of see what that is.
Yeah.
I think by the time we record next Sunday, I think we will know who, the coach is.
You know who the coach is if it's somebody that's not at a program currently, because I don't think a coach with 1-2 weeks left in the season accepts the job publicly and does that to their players. So they may take it the second the regular season is over and not coach their team in a bowl game, which we see happen a lot. But the only way we know next Sunday is if it's somebody who's not in college football currently.
Yeah, no. I think Urban and them can come to terms by then. So, so that's perfect. So, all right, you got anything else before we go?
No, I'm good. But, you know, everybody that listens, if you guys have questions, comments, feedback, we love it. You can tweet us. I'm at Allie_Peak. TJ, what's your Twitter?
TJ_Pittenger. We really put a lot of thought into these.
Yeah, we did, right?
Handles.
Well, to be fair, mine was created like 10 years ago, but my legal last name is not even Peek anymore, which my husband, every time we talk about this show or somebody calls me to do an interview or whatever else, he's like, oh, Allie Peek again, huh?
Yeah. Whoops.
Whoops. Hey, listen, it sounds a lot better now, Allie Wilbur. What are you going to do?
Yeah, that's on him, honestly. So
I mean, have a better last name. You know.
All right, before I get shot, so let's get out of here.
All right. Well, yep, everybody find us on Twitter. Give us some feedback. Let us know what you think. And we'll be back next week.